Jeremy Corbyn.
Okay, so first I told you I put you on the spot with a political question. The recent success, we alluded to him in the podcast, the recent success of, and you know, many centrist positions in the U.S. calling it a qualified success or a loss of Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party in the most recent snap elections. Beg the question, so Jeremy Corbyn gets a lot of different characterizations from a moderate leftist to a frothing at the mouth Marxist radical. I am still kind of trying to formulate my position on him. I like him as a politician. I am to be totally honest, I like him as a politician. Mm-hmm. I am learning more about him as time goes on though, and trying to formulate my views. So I'm wondering what is your take on Corbyn, and perhaps on impossible not to speak to this, but Corbyn and the Labour Party itself.
Well, I'm not a Labour Party member. I was and left it around the time that I started to become, well, I would say more politically aware, and moved left, essentially.
Right.
If I think if Corbyn had been around 7 years ago, I would not have left the Labour Party. I don't think that electoralism works for socialism, but I certainly think that the Corbyn project is to be supported, flaws and all, at least critically. I think what it's opening up in terms of left discourse in the UK is really important. There's a lot more engagement with left politics and these ideas coming back into the mainstream, especially among young people, than there has been for years and years and years. Aside from that, while Corbyn and the Labour Party in general, taking the Labour Party here to mean the Labour left, which is currently in control, essentially. Shaky control, but they are in control. They have some positions that I don't agree with, and in fact think should be strongly criticised. For instance, they do have a tendency to capitulate on issues about immigration, capitulating to the right. But I think the other aspects are still very important. And even on issues like immigration, it's not just a lesser evilism, but that there is room to engage with that issue in ways that couldn't be done before. That's where in only 2 years ago, the Labour Party stood on outright controls on immigration.
The mugs and everything.
The monolith.
Yeah. What an embarrassing campaign. truly humiliating.
And I absolutely don't think that Labour has got rid of the racism in its own ranks or among its supporters, or most certainly not among its voters. But there is an opportunity to try and shift the terms of engagement here with that argument, and convince people that there's people, not just voters, but also the Labour Party itself needs convincing, that they shouldn't be against immigration, that sort of stuff. There was a case with the recent manifesto they ran on, which is frankly the best manifesto the Labour Party has had in my lifetime, and I hope it's not going to be a one-off.
that's always the hope.
Where its proclamations on immigration became worse by the time it was finalized, as opposed to the leaked first draft that was, or leaked earlier draft that was put in the press. But I think Corbyn is... I think one of the most important things about Corbyn is that he is, to a far greater degree than normal, in any Labour politician, let alone a leader, he is an anti-imperialist in many ways, and has been supportive of anti-imperialist causes Palestinian rights,
anti-apartheid,
anti-apartheid, ties with Cuba and Venezuela, that kind of stuff. The very, very supportive of anti-imperialist causes. Obviously, I don't think that social democracy, and that is what Corbyn is offering, largely. I don't think social democracy can dismantle imperialism. I think there's some really interesting stuff going on there. Like the recent manifesto included analysis into alternative forms of ownership, such as looking into cooperatives and nationalization, and comparing like the pros and cons of all these sort of things, and like how these could be looked into. They also had like a commitment to program and fund to help any country in the world set up its own universal healthcare system, which
the US should take them up on.
But that sort of thing that's like genuine internationalism of a really positive kind of way, where helping a country to set up its own national healthcare service is it's not how foreign aid usually manifests, where it ties up like this kind of
quid pro quo,
and like debt relations and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It's this is I think that these sort of proposals are genuinely new and exciting, even for like what's possible, just pushing the limits of what's possible in social democracy. And I don't think we're going to establish socialism by the ballot box and not the SPGB. That's another niche Twitter joke for you. I think that we also have to work with what's possible, and
sure.
Which is not to say stop hoping for revolution or stop working for revolution. It's that I don't see anything wrong with voting for the Labour Party in its current form, its current tacking left form, while also organising leftist groups, organising community structures, educating, that kind of stuff. I think that's all very important, and especially with how, just on a purely practical level, the fact that the Conservative government no longer has such a large majority means that they have much less leeway in passing harmful legislation, which has been straight up killing people. So just in terms of the immediate short term, I think that's a victory worth celebrating. It's not a victory, but it's it feels unproblematically like taking steps forward, and that's something that I'm not used to feeling.
That's a good way of putting it, actually. I think that's that feeling of moving forward, again, sort of tying back into what we talked about in the main podcast about there being ways to enjoy something while also criticizing it. That feeling of
whether it's video games or Corbyn memes.
Right, exactly. You could always laugh and then say like, but that keep pressure on immigration.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the most important things. But even without that, the manifestos did still have, for instance, commitments to protections for Roma and travelers, and far greater like protections for trans people, and all this sort of stuff, which is very important and isn't seen elsewhere in British politics. It's also worth noting that from a British perspective, most of the far-left socialist parties have as bad or worse a position on immigration as the Labour Party does currently.
Oh, really?
Absolutely. A lot of them outright supported the Leave vote at the EU referendum.
Oh, Lexit.
Yes, but it was Lexit which explicitly said that reducing immigration will help British workers and all this sort of stuff. And, you know,
yeah,
it's because immigrants compete for wages and all this, you know, it's and that was both the, not both, it was the CPBs and the Communist Party of Britain and the Socialist Workers Party and the CPGBML. They also, you got the Trots, the Stalinists, they all decided we hate immigrants.
Wow.
So,
you know, it's not, I guess it's not, it reminds me of some of the IWW rhetoric in the early part of the 20th century about immigrant labor and sort of American labor and you know, ultimately white laborers versus black laborers in early 20th century labor politics. So yeah, I guess I'm surprised, but also it's a not surprising historical precedent as well.
Absolutely.
It's very disappointing.
Yeah.
Well, on a more up note than that, here's a non-political question for you. I just need to pick your brain. I like your takes on politics, and I thought if I have you here, I'll selfishly ask a question that I'm sure other people want to hear an answer to as well. I was actually talking with, I believe, mutual friend Andrew Fairbairn on Twitter the other day about Corbyn, and I was like, yeah, I don't think I know enough about British politics. And he's like, well, if I'm being honest, I don't know enough about anything but British politics. And I was like, yeah, I think that's probably natural. Like, if you get very into your own national politics, then your knowledge of other countries' inner workings suffer a little bit, unless you have a very special mind. Okay, so the question I ask everyone, and this puts you on the spot a little bit, but I think in maybe a fun way, given you know, given World Enough in Time, given all the technical, monetary, and you know, corporate related resources that you could possibly want, or you know, to sort of tack it as far left as we would both want it to be, all the sort of communally generated state owned resources, or perhaps however unproblematically you can do it, if you had all those resources and all the leniency in the world, including the skills, what would be the game that you would most like to create or see in the world?
That's
a tough one.
That's a tough one, and it's one that I have at different points in the past had answers to, and those answers have changed sometimes because the game that I wanted to see got made.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, there was a point where I really, really wanted a game where you could be like a medieval soldier commander and like taking part in massive battles and maybe command your own troops and like that sort of stuff, and then there was Mountain Blade, that kind of stuff. So trying to think just now, what do I have any dream games at the moment? I would really like to see an in-depth but accessible strategy game about mid-17th century British Isles in terms of the Wars of the Three Kingdoms, not the Chinese ones, but the English...
They already have those.
The English Civil War and associated wars, the Covenanter Wars, the Wars in Ireland. Basically, I think it's a perfect kind of setting for just enclosed enough, contained enough, as well as having conflict of different kinds, religious, social, national, that you can make a really interesting kind of game about that.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And it's one of those games that wouldn't, I think a lot of people outside of the UK, and I don't, well, maybe inside too, but I would assume especially outside, would also, it would be one of those games where the history wasn't entirely known.
Oh, absolutely. So it's not known.
Exploratory.
It's not known even in the UK, I would say. not very much. We don't genuinely do not learn much about the Wars of the Three Kingdoms here, other than the very, very basics.
Yeah, the most I learned about it recently was from when we watched an episode of Escape to the Country on Netflix. And I mean, I don't want to impugn Escape to the Country's
politics.
Oh,
please, please
anything.
Do. It's the Toryist program.
Yeah, it is. It is extremely Tory. They just go into towns and buy these houses, and they're like, "How can we improve them?"
British daytime television is the most right-wing thing you will ever see. It's just, it's endless property programs or following like border cops or bailiffs repossessing furniture from people or like, it's just awful.
I couldn't watch those. The property ones, at least, like there's a kind of guilty pleasure in it of being like, wow, those British countrysides sure are beautiful. It's nice to see houses. And then in the back of my mind, I'm like, this is really bad. Like you shouldn't be enjoying this as much as you are. But border cops and bailiffs repossessing, I think, I don't know if I could watch that. But yeah, I mean, if in fact that's the most history I've gotten from it, because some, you know, people from a London suburb wanted to buy a house in Scotland, I probably could use a little more history on it.
Yeah. I find the period really, really fascinating. Not only for the aforementioned sort of religious and cultural and stuff that I was going on, but you've got the, for instance, you could certainly find a way to represent this, the sort of primitive communal sort of revolutions that were going on at the same time with like the levelers and stuff, these kind of like,
sure.
Often very religious groups that decided they, you know, what was the rhyme? When Adam sowed and Eve span, who was then the gentleman or something like that? You know, there's this idea of we need to go to some kind of like biblically founded anarchism, or
yeah, I always that's around the same time as the that's all those sort of like extremely radical religious, like the levelers, and then the that's also around the time of the Luddites, right?
The Luddites.
Am I wrong?
Luddites were very, very different. There was
well, I know that, yeah, the different sects.
Well, no, the Luddites were not a sect. The Luddites were machine breakers in the Industrial Revolution. They declared themselves the followers of Ned Ludd, who was like this essentially made-up figurehead for them. They went around breaking the machinery that was essentially putting them out of a job. It was Luddite has become this kind of like old-fashioned, or like, you know, you're against technological progress, but they were specifically against technological progress that was putting them out of a job. It wasn't the progress itself, but the social relations that came with it, they were protesting.
I've once again displayed my poor grasp of history for all and sundry to see. That's super interesting. I'm glad you corrected me on that, because now I'd like to know more. I know the levelers from my work when we'd work on restoration,
yeah,
or prior literature. That would be completely fascinating. And I find those games, and they're rarer and rarer, because I think most people want to play games that are about a historical period they know.
Yeah,
so,
that's the thing. Like, I think this would make a fantastic, say, Total War game. It's just a bit too niche. I could see it being like an expansion to another one. But I think like the Total War games that worked best, apart from the most recent Warhammer one, which is another matter entirely, have been the ones that have taken a very specific period and represented it in often abstracted ways, but in a really interesting and in-depth way, like Shogun 2, which did, you know, it's just Japan. Like 16th century Japan with the arrival of Christianity and the Europeans and gunpowder spreading, and because you've got the political and religious and technological conflicts all at the same time. And it's or the expansion to that, Fall of the Samurai, which is the Boshin War, with the when the imperial forces went to war with the shogunates and essentially set up Imperial Japan. Historically, the Boshin War only lasted a very short time and was very limited in bloodshed, but they made an entire game out of it using like the basics of that. It's quite accurate to the history, except just way more bloody, just because.
Well, yeah, it's a video game, right?
Yeah. But again, it's the sort of, you know, the Europeans getting involved. You've got the Americans and British and French lending support, and you've got the traditional versus modern technology as well. It's all this stuff that I think it needs a particular amount of conflict points or axes of conflict,
yeah,
to make it really pop. And that's what you get in this particular aspect, where you've got the Catholic versus different flavors of Protestant. You've got the royalists against the parliamentarians. There's the Covenanters elsewhere, and then there's how royalist support in Scotland manifested, or royalist support in Ireland, and the way it all works out, so it gets this just an ideal setting for something that could go in lots of different exciting ways in a game,
I think. I love that answer. I do. I say this every time, and I'm sure my patrons are sick of hearing me say it, but there's every time I ask someone this question, it always goes exactly the same way, where they go like, oh, that's brutal, and they stop and they think, and like every time without fail, they always come up with something that's like super interesting or super telling about like ideas about video games. It's the best question. I hate putting people on the spot, but like I will do it every time for that, because it always produces something good. Well, thank you. This was really fun. Please come on anytime. I'd actually love to hear a whole podcast episode about the idea of axes of conflict in real-time strategy or grand strategy games. Maybe I will play through an entire Paradox campaign at some point and then actually be able to talk about it. thanks, Andrew. And again, follow Andrew on Twitter. ANNDRAADUNN, and follow his and others' work at left-shift.com. Really good leftist writing on games, just very much worth your time.
Thanks.
Thank you.